Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Friday session of the California Coastal Commission. We will begin with a roll call vote, or a roll call, please.
Commissioner O'Malley.
Present.
Commissioner Jackson.
Here.
Commissioner Kelly.
Here.
Commissioner Larson.
Here.
Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner Lopez.
Presente.
Commissioner Preciado.
Oh, I can do that. Presente.
Commissioner Wilson.
Buenos dias.
Chair Harmon.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Now we'll move to the virtual meeting procedures, please.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have internet access and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person through the Zoom platform or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittals are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission agenda's webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comments may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comments are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it's your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone and provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Great. Thank you, Simone. Before we move to agenda changes, I'll ask our Deputy Chief Counsel to give us a report out from closed session, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The commission met at the end of the day yesterday, October 9th, in closed session. It received litigation information and advice and provided direction on the following cases: Bel Air Bay Club versus Coastal Commission, Bookout versus Coastal Commission, Hodian versus Coastal Commission, Casamira Homeowners Association versus Coastal Commission, San Mateo Farm Bureau versus Coastal Commission, County Farm Bureau, pardon me, versus Coastal Commission, Friends of Oceano Dunes versus Coastal Commission, and two matters of potential litigation. And I'd just like to clarify, as reflected in the August meeting minutes approved yesterday, that in closed session at the August 2025 commission meeting, the commission set aside and revoked the commission's March 2021 action on an amendment to CDP 4-82-300. During closed session yesterday, the commission also received information about City of Fort Bragg versus Mendocino Railway, Mendocino Railway versus Hucklebridge, Rio Del Mar Beach Island Homeowners Association versus Coastal Commission, and Space Exploration Technologies Corporation versus Coastal Commission. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and now we will move to agenda changes, please. Mr. Harmon.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners. All told, there are 6 agenda changes for today. Item 10A, the Linda Isle consistency determination for dredging in Newport Bay with ocean disposal, moved to consent. Item 13A, San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment updating flood hazard provisions, moved to consent. Item 14A, Lougheed CDP application for armoring in Pismo Beach, moved to consent. Item 14B, Lewis CDP application for armoring in Cayucos, moved to consent. Item 15A, Potbelly Beach HOA CDP amendment application for revetment restacking in South Santa Cruz County, moved to consent. And item 15B, the Colligan/Burns CDP amendment application for revetment restacking and landscaping in the Live Oak Beach area of Santa Cruz County, moved to consent. I would note that the proposed agenda changes memo is not quite accurate. Item 13B is no longer moved to consent, and that's the Monterey County ADU provisions. There will be a full hearing on that item today. And that concludes the agenda changes for today.
Great. Thank you very much. Now we will move to general public comment, please.
For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it's your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comments at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will bring you in as a panelist. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload. This may take a moment to speed up this process. We will bring several people in at a time, but will remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I will call your name in the order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and introduce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. First up, we have Walter Lamb, followed by Brian Rinero, followed by John Donati.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Walter Lamb, representing the Bino Wetlands Land Trust. I think there's a presentation for my...
Yes, it's coming up right now.
Okay.
One second, okay?
All right. Well, while that's coming up, I just want to say, so here we go, that the drains that you've been hearing a lot about for many, many years were finally sealed below grade. So these were drains that were put in the 1990s, discovered by a Bino Wetlands nature photographer in 2013. In 2017, you met to discuss removing the drains. We had a lot of discussion about instead of removing them, which would cause a lot of impact and cost a lot of money, to instead, again, abandon them by capping and sealing them below grade. And so the picture, the timer's kind of in the way a little bit, but you can see they are gone. And so the Bino Wetlands is a really special place. It doesn't look like a lot of ecologic reserves because it is in a very urbanized setting. So when we can score these little incremental victories, it's cause for celebration. So sometimes it takes a long time to get there, and that process can be frustrating. But when we get there, it helps the ecologic reserve, and that's what we're trying to do. So we're going to celebrate this, you know, little milestone and move on to the next one. If you go to the next slide, please. And so we're very excited for this ecologic reserve. I know for about 20 years, 21 years, it's been a lot of contention. But we see an opportunity now to kind of move past that and get into a next chapter for the Bino Wetlands. And so we really have four little prongs here. One is equitable public access, obviously wildlife-friendly, culturally sensitive for nature education and habitat stewardship. We think we're getting closer to that. Along with enhancement of native habitats, right? So we really don't want lots of mustard and castor bean. We really want more things like alkali heath and Cressa truxellensis. And then, of course, underlying all of that, tribal engagement, traditional ecological knowledge, and all decision-making. And then the fourth one, and this is gets into that project that you've been hearing about for a long time, to just kind of go back to the drawing board, see if we can come up with a project. Not everyone's going to like it, but we might be able to find something that's feasible, that's actually doable. and that, you know, gets us most of what we want or most of what everyone wants at the Bionic Wetlands without another 20 years of delay, kind of, you know, pursuing that white whale of the project that we think is there now. So again, thank you. Keep moving forward and really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Next is Brian Venero, followed by John Donate. And then from Zoom, we have Cindy Abbott, Naomi Maurice, Patricia Opas, and Carl Lambert, and then Diana Sandoval.
Good morning, commissioners, and welcome new commissioners. My name is Brian Renero. I'm a founding member of Pacifica Homes Are Not Hotels, a grassroots organization involving hundreds of Pacificans who are working to update our short-term rental ordinance in Pacifica. We are delighted that the Pacifica City Council voted unanimously to adopt our new ordinance this year, and the community celebrated this achievement by writing what the new ordinance means to them on this banner, which we all wanted to share with you here today. The new ordinance goes into effect in the non-coastal zone at the end of this month. We ask that the commission approve the ordinance when it comes before you, in the coastal zone where the majority of STRs in Pacifica exist. We in Pacifica are eager to share our beautiful beaches. We want visitors. We thrive with visitors, but the accommodations must be safe. These STR businesses pose a real danger to guests. Visitors have a right to safe accommodations, but many STRs have converted garages into unpermitted and wholly uninspected dwelling spaces. The STR across the street from me has done such an unpermitted garage conversion and advertises itself as accommodating 12 persons in a 1,080 square foot space. These houses have no fire-rated doors, no secondary egress, and no panic hardware. It is not a matter of if, but when a fire or a stampede breaks out in one of these overpacked party houses and someone gets seriously hurt. Imagine a child or a disabled person caught in one of these STRs in such an event. We are dealing with a time bomb here. These houses are not ADA compliant. Operators exploit this regulatory gap for profit. If allowed to continue, it risks putting local hotels, which must adhere to these safety and accessibility codes, at risk of running out of business. That will eliminate disabled persons' access to safe accommodations in the coastal zone. The new ordinance changes that. Please help us complete this journey and approve the ordinance for our community and visitors. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is John Donate.
Hello, commissioners. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is John Donati, and I speak today in full support of the many environmental community groups opposing the project development on the narrow spit of land at the Carpinteria Marsh Reserve, where it meets the Pacific Ocean, commonly known as 501 Sandpoint Road. We know this project poses an unacceptable threat to California's most fragile ecosystems, and that any disturbance here risks accelerating erosion and disrupting the delicate balance of the protected preserve. The logistical concerns are just as serious. The only access to the site is a 12-foot wide sand and gravel road just inches from the high tide line and bordered by homes that have stood here for generations. And over the course of more than a year during construction, this narrow lane will be pounded by heavy concrete trucks, steel and lumber deliveries at daily construction worker traffic. This road was never designed for that kind of load or frequency. Let's be honest, one slight driver error while turning or backing a large vehicle, and we could have a truck toppled right into the salt marsh, spilling fuel, oil, and debris into the protected ecosystem. It seems that it's not a matter or a question of if, but when something like this will happen. It appears that the commission cannot stop the project outright, so we at least urge you to protect the public and the environment by requiring the landowner who's doing the development to post a substantial bond, one large enough to cover the multi-million dollar cost of potentially removing the structure from the site, repairing the road that could be damaged, compensating neighbors for the loss of use and access and the loss of their property value, and the possible extraction of a toppled vehicle and the cleanup of contamination from the protected salt marsh reserve. Without any such bond, a simple bankruptcy could allow the developer to walk away, leaving destruction and the expense to the neighbors, the city, and the state.
Thank you, sir.
So please protect our coast with strong financial safeguards. And to the developer,
Thank
I say,
you,
donate the land to future generations to enjoy. Your name should be synonymous
Thank
sir,
with you.
Preservation
and not a memorable California man-made disaster. Thank you. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Cindy Abbott, if you can go ahead and unmute yourself on Zoom.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and all Coastal Commissioners. I'm Cindy Abbott, a resident of Pacifica in San Mateo County. A grassroots network began forming in June of 2022 when Pacificans began to see the loss of community members due to displacement and neighborly connection was being replaced by a revolving door of strangers who don't volunteer, go to our schools, or support local stores and services on an ongoing basis. This was because of an increasing number of homes and apartments being converted from long-term housing to short-term vacation rentals. In June of 2024, this issue came to the Coastal Commission. At that time, the City of Pacifica brought forward an amended ordinance to implement a cap on the overall number of short-term rentals in the city. While you approved the cap, several on the commission at that time questioned why stronger action wasn't being taken, even including a moratorium on new short-term rentals. And Pacificans agreed, recognizing that a citywide cap wasn't going to stop the conversion of homes to mini hotels throughout our residential neighborhoods. As you just heard, after years of meetings, the Pacifica City Council passed a new ordinance earlier this year. The revised ordinance reflects common sense regulations that have been implemented in other coastal cities, such as a maximum of 60 days of unhosted rentals and a primary residency requirement. This maintains support for homeowners who want to take part in the sharing economy by opening their home to visitors, while moves away from the commercialization of our homes. With implementation of the new ordinance, we're delighted to share that we've already seen changes in our neighborhoods, with new families moving into places that had been vacation homes. But we still need relief in the coastal zone, and we look forward to this coming to you very soon and your approval to provide the relief for our coastal neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Naomi Maurice.
Hi there. Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone. Oh, I think I have some visual aids as well.
Yes, we're bringing it up right now.
Thank you. I can just start with my intro while that's coming up. Thanks everyone for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Naomi Maurice and I'm a water quality data analyst at Heal the Bay. And I'm here to talk to you all about our beach report card and our river report card annual reports, which were released last month. You can go to the next slide, please. So just as an overview, Heal the Bay's Beach Report Card is a program that started over 30 years ago. And for this program, we provide A through F letter grades to beaches across California on both a weekly and an annual basis. And these grades are based on state water quality bacteria standards and just provide an overall indicator of what water quality is like at a specific beach. And we have a web page as well as an app that allow you to check weekly water quality results. And then our annual reports provide grades for the full year. And really the goal of all of this is to educate the public and to provide them with information necessary to make their own decisions about where they'd like to swim. And then we also use this information for advocacy to talk about the health risks associated with coming in contact with contaminated waters and also to assess trends at beaches over time. Next slide, please. So within our report that came out last month, we provide statewide, regional, and county overviews describing what water quality was like this past year and how it compares to historical trends. And then we also have our honor roll and beach bummers lists. And those are just lists that compile the least and most polluted beaches across the state. You can go to the next slide. And then in addition to providing annual grades to beaches, we also had two special sections this year to highlight issues around the state. The first focused on pollution in the Bay Area and the impacts they're seeing from the combined sewer system overflows. And then the second is on ASH to Action, which is Heal the Bay's post-fire water quality testing and the possible link between fire runoff and beach report card grades. So if anyone's interested in those topics, we suggest taking a look at the special sections. And then you can go to our last slide here, which also just talks about our river report card. The goal of this is very similar to the card, but here we're issuing grades for 35 freshwater sites in LA County. So thanks for the opportunity to speak hoping that folks go ahead and look at our reports there. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Naomi. Next is Patty Opatz. Patty, if you can unmute yourself.
There we go. All right. Patricia Opatz of Fort Bragg. I have 2 points. The lawsuit with Mendocino Railway and reading between the lines of the Surface Transportation Board's September decision. While negotiating with the city this July, Mendocino Railway petitioned the Surface Transportation Board, and this September, it clarified its jurisdiction-free railway status. The question is, why? Point two, for Fort Bragg to settle the lawsuit to save legal costs is ironical. A 300-plus acre coastal bluff resort development in a water-challenged area with active DTSC issues will change. This month, Fort Bragg City will approve the memorandum and the settlement. This pressurized process has been flushed out, pushed through during 3 30-day stays. Plans will change. The future will find Fort Bragg back into litigation to enforce these agreements. Last, I want to send oceans of thanks to the Commission for their forward-thinking strategic plan draft. Your goals, humility, and hard-earned wisdom are needed in these times. I'll close with your goal too, which ties to my points. The Commission supports local governments in balancing development that fosters vibrant, inclusive communities with the Coastal Act's mandate to protect coastal resources, prioritize public access, recreation, and environmental stewardship. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you. Next is Carl Lambert. Carl, you can unmute yourself.
My name is Carl Lambert.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my camera's not going on. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Carl. Go ahead and start talking.
All right. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the affirmative vote for the restoration of our historic restaurant and theater. You gave me the vote the other day. I want to clarify that there was a comment made about an ATF and a fine, and the reason was because the city of Los Angeles, even though they approved the project, I had all my permits for the hotel operation, they failed to notify the Coastal Commission for 2 years due to it. Clerk said, we filed it in the yellow file instead of the red file. That said, I ended up with the black eye. So on this project, I've received over 30 permits. Every agency in the city of Los Angeles, building and safety planning, everybody has reviewed it. And they looked at every guest room, light housekeeping room, kitchen. Everything has been approved. The head of building and safety said, Carl Lambert, your project is exemplary. Now then, over time, I have dedicated over 20 units in the coastal area for low and moderate housing. In fact, I even remodeled a 20-unit building one door away from the Venice Waldorf, and I handed it to Venice Community Housing Corporation with a zero markup. It's now 20 low-income housing units. After the earthquake, I was the president of the Apartment Association in Santa Monica, and Tom Hayden asked me after the earthquake, how do we put our housing back together? I said, you can't, because of all of the regulations from the city. He said, no, really, how? And I gave him an outline in an hour, and they passed it in two months later, the city council passed it, and we put buildings back together. I don't know if I'm going to rebuild my home in that we lost in the Palisades, because it's just, we're exhausted after this particular process. But if you want to figure out a way to build housing in coastal zone, I'm happy to help come up with a program that would actually work.
Thank you,
for
sir.
All. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Last is Diana Sandoval, but we don't see her on Zoom, so that concludes our public speaking.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Now we'll move to the consent calendar, please.
There are no items on the regular consent calendar, but I'll move to item 6, which is items moved to consent. As I described earlier today, we have 6 items that have been moved to today's consent calendar, which I will quickly identify. Item 10A, this is the Linda Isle consistency determination for dredging in Newport Bay with ocean disposal. Item 13A, this is the San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment updating flood hazard provisions. Item 14A, this is the Lougheed CDP application for armoring in Pismo Beach. Item 14B, this is the Lewis CDP application for armoring in Cayucos. Item 15A, this is the Potbelly Beach HOA CDP amendment application for revetment restacking in South Santa Cruz County. And item 15B, this is the Colligan/Burns CDP amendment application for revetment restacking and landscaping in the Live Oak Beach area of Santa Cruz County. I would note that we received several comments raising some objections to a couple of the items moved to consent, so I'd like to note and respond to those. First, with respect to 14B, the Lewis armoring proposal in Cayucos, staff received comments from the Morro Coast Audubon Society concerned about the project due to potential nesting and other bird-related impacts, both during and after construction. In response, we'd note that we prepared an addendum that incorporates Audubon suggestions, including adding into the special conditions enhanced bird protections during construction, as well as integrating bird nesting perches and other elements into the contouring of the seawall itself. With such changes, staff, including the commission's ecologist, believe the specified bird issues can be effectively resolved, and both Audubon commenters were satisfied that such issues were addressed. I would also note that the Surf Rider Foundation was in support of this project as well. With respect to 15A, the Potbelly Beach revetment restacking in South Santa Cruz County, staff received comments suggesting that some of the homes being protected may no longer constitute existing structures allowed shoreline armoring under the Coastal Act, that additional conditions should be applied to provide better notice that a full analysis will be necessary to determine if armoring is allowable at all once the revetment here reaches the 50% replacement threshold, and asking for clarification that previous unpermitted rock work at the site was included in the roughly 10% redevelopment noted in the staff report. In terms of the redevelopment accounting, yes, staff can confirm that such prior work was included in the accounting of work to date. As to the other suggestions, staff does not disagree that these are important concepts, but notes that all of these issues are already identified in the staff report. The report makes clear that those issues, including whether a replacement armoring structure is allowable in relation to existing versus non-existing structures, will be evaluated in the future if or when the revetment replacement status, when the revetment reaches replacement status after passing the 50% threshold, but are not the critical question now with this more minor repair project where the commission's review lens is necessarily more narrow. Accordingly, while staff very much appreciates the comments and generally shares the sentiments expressed, staff does not believe that any changes are necessary to the staff recommendation at this time and continues to recommend that this item will be approved on the consent calendar. For the other items, only support correspondence was received. Thus, for all of the items moved to consent, the applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendations. We have described known objections on these items and have made changes via addenda or explained why they don't change the staff recommendations where applicable. Thus, we continue to recommend the commission approve these 6 items through the consent calendar.
Great, thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on these matters? Seeing none, any public comments?
Yes, so we have Keith Merkel, he's available for questions on Zoom, and then Steve Kinsley for F14A. He is attending and he would like to speak. So, and then we have Steve Kinsley who would like to speak on F15B. And I don't know who SK is. Somebody just brought that person in for F13A.
Great.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I will return to the commission for comments, questions, or a motion on these items.
I'll move consent, but I do have a comment, and I think Supervisor. Sorry.
Commissioner Lopez, did you?
Lopez as well.
I was okay. Ready to move.
Great. Okay. Commissioner Wilson.
Yeah, and I know just one comment, and I think it's on the same item that Supervisor Lopez was going to comment on. I appreciate the work done on the ADU provisions
there
for...
There was actually a change on the Monterey one.
Oh, Monterey.
Yeah, it got pulled. We're going to have a full,
we're gonna have a full hearing on that item.
Oh, it did get pulled. Okay, I thought it was still on consent. Man, I need another cup of coffee. My motion still stands.
Amazing. All right. Well, we have a motion from Commissioner Wilson, a second from Commissioner Lopez. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the consent calendar is adopted. Thank you. And now we will move to the Deputy Director's report for the North Coast District, please.
Good morning. Item 7 is the Deputy Director's report for the North Coast District, which includes one waiver and one immaterial amendment for development in Humboldt County. Staff is not aware of any opposition to these items, and we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any item in the report.
Great, thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
None.
Great. Do three or more commissioners object to any of these items? Okay, the commission concurs. Thank you. Now we are on to 8A.
Item 8A is a Caltrans application to amend a previously approved permit for Highway 101 corridor improvements in Humboldt County. Abigail Strickland, the Transportation Program Analyst in our North Coast District, will be giving the presentation.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners. Item 8A is an application by Caltrans to amend their existing permit for the Eureka Arcata Highway 101 Corridor Improvement Project. This amendment relates to the timing of Caltrans' sea level rise adaptation efforts for this corridor. As you can see from the slide image before you, Highway 101 here sits directly adjacent to the ocean at Humboldt Bay, and flooding of the highway is an increasing concern. Next slide, please. This amendment concerns a 6-mile-long stretch of Highway 101 between Eureka and Arcata in Humboldt County. Highway 101 through this area was constructed in the 1920s and is inland of a now-defunct railroad constructed decades earlier along the eastern margin of Humboldt Bay. The railway and highway were built across Humboldt Bay tidelands, and along with significant farming, resulted in the diking of natural tidelands and blocking tidal sloughs located inland of the highway corridor. Next slide, please. In 2019, the Commission approved a CDP authorizing Caltrans to undertake the Eureka-Arcata Route 101 Corridor Improvement Project for various highway safety improvements throughout the corridor, as shown on this slide. Essentially, the approved project authorized construction of a new interchange at Indianola Cutoff, replacement of the southbound Jacoby Creek Bridge, and various other safety and drainage improvements. The project also included funding for the City of Arcata and Humboldt County to complete segments of the California Coastal Trail and Great Redwood Trail along the bay, shown in yellow and blue. And the construction of the 101 Corridor Improvement Project is partially complete, but is still ongoing. Next slide, please. As mentioned, the highway here sits directly adjacent to the Humboldt Bay, and at the time of approval, the risks to the highway from sea level rise were clear. A required vulnerability analysis showed segments of the highway vulnerable to as little as 1 foot of sea level rise, which under projections at the time could be in the early 2030s, as shown here in the red segment of the corridor near its southern end. Because of the high vulnerability of the project due to flood risks, the commission required two conditions related to sea level rise and the emerging threat it posed to Highway 101. Next slide, please. Special Condition 1 included various monitoring and reporting requirements. Caltrans has been submitting these reports and has presented updates to this commission several times. Caltrans will present the results of its latest annual monitoring effort in just a few minutes. Special Condition 2 requires Caltrans to develop and submit a Comprehensive Adaptation and Implementation Plan, or CAPE, for the highway by December 31st, 2025. The purpose of the CAPE is to identify a suite of adaptation alternatives necessary for adapting the highway corridor to minimize flood risks. The condition also requires the CAPE to reflect public outreach, as well as extensive coordination with the long-term planning efforts of Humboldt County and the cities of Eureka and Arcata, all of which are in the process of comprehensive LCP updates. Given that the project is adjacent to or connects with significant development in the area of these local governments, that collaboration and LCP planning is essential to determine the appropriate range of adaptation options. In this amendment application, Caltrans is requesting more time to complete the final CAPE, specifically to allow submittal of the final CAPE by December 2027 rather than 2025. Next slide, please. Here again, we can see the highway and its close location to the bay. This photo was taken a few years ago prior to the completion of the Bay Trail along the railroad corridor. Completion of the Bay Trail along this stretch has contributed to some stability and protection of the highway, but the area remains highly vulnerable to flood risks, including from the inland side. As you'll hear, Caltrans has made considerable progress on the CAPE, including through a productive partnership with Cal Poly Humboldt to complete a refined vulnerability assessment for different segments of the project corridor and various pathways for flood risk, both from the bay and from the inland side of the highway. This study is close to, but not quite complete, and additional coordination with the Technical Advisory Committee and local governments is needed. The county and the two cities are undergoing comprehensive LCP updates, which will have implications for land use planning in the corridor. One example of the LCP connection to the corridor is the county's Murray Field Airport that is adjacent to the most vulnerable section of the corridor. Currently, that facility, which is below sea level rise and difficult to maintain, is accessed via the 101 corridor. But to what extent future adapted highway corridor needs to maintain connection to this airport, or whether the county may consider relocating the facility elsewhere, is a fundamental question that needs an additional analysis to inform consideration of the different alternatives under the CAPE. Next slide, please. Staff therefore recommend that it's appropriate to extend the timeline for submittal of the final CAPE under Special Condition 2. As mentioned, with the extension, the final CAPE would incorporate recommendations from technical studies and public outreach and would be submitted by the end of 2027. It's also important to note that the existing permit conditions will remain in effect, including a requirement that Caltrans expedite and submit the CAPE within 1 year of the time that any significant flooding of the highway occurs. The motion to implement the staff recommendation is on page 5. That concludes my presentation, and as mentioned, Caltrans staff is here to present the results of the annual corridor monitoring and reasons for the CAPE extension. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes? Okay. Turn it over to our team for public comment, please.
We don't have any public speakers, but we did have the person from Caltrans signed up, Lorna McFarland, but we're unable to see them on the Zoom meeting. If Lorna or... Okay, we do see a hand raised now. It's under a device that's... Okay, you're being moved in as a panelist right now. You should be able to unmute when you're ready.
Is she available for questions or wants to make...
No, she has a presentation.
Oh, she does. Okay, excuse me. How much time would you like, ma'am?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. I think I should be able to get through this in just about 6 or 7 minutes, if not faster.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Okay. So as you just heard from Abby, I'm here to present on the Eureka-Arcata corridor, and we're seeking a time extension of 2 additional years. Next slide, please. So as Abby went through, our original permit was conditioned with 2 special conditions, one that required annual monitoring and reporting, and of course the CAPE, which is the Comprehensive Adaptation and Implementation Plan. Next slide, please. So the annual monitoring, I just wanted to present this year's data. So this is a report that includes water elevation from the North Spit tide gates, an analysis of coastal hazards along the 101, and then a report on any maintenance activities or hazard responses that had to take place within the last year. Next slide, please. So the big takeaway here is that the maximum water elevation has been similar across all reporting years. There was no flooding or coastal hazard impacts this year along the highway. And there was also no need for repair or maintenance of dikes or berms, and no impacts that required a planned response. So we had a fairly uneventful year. You can see on the bottom is this past year, 24-25. And then on the right, the colored bars, you can see is the reporting across years. Next slide, please. So I'll take a minute to report on the progress that we've made so far in the Cape before getting into what we need next. So you can see we received the CDP in 2019. Everything along the bottom where you see a wave is king tide monitoring that we have conducted. Everywhere you see that scroll is an annual monitoring report that we have submitted. And then everywhere you see a blue star along the bottom is a presentation we've done to the Coastal Commission. So we've been pretty active with all of our monitoring and reporting. And then we've been working with Cal Poly Humboldt, as Abby mentioned. We've got a contract in place, and we are continuing to work with them. Next slide, please. So just before we get into what we need next, this is what we've done. We've established a climate change adaptation unit at Caltrans. This is new. We have a senior environmental scientist, myself, two environmental scientists, and a senior environmental planner. We've expanded our tide monitoring. So this year's tide monitoring has a lot more data than previous years. We've been undertaking significant coordination with the County of Humboldt on planning efforts, including adjacent land. Same with City of Arcata for parcels they own. We've been having extensive coordination with CDFW about the Faisaloo Wildlife Area, and we currently do have a draft of the CAPE completed. Next slide, please. So this is our future timeline. This is kind of why we need the extension. We are continuing to work with Cal Poly Humboldt, and we are continuing that local coordination, all of which are incredibly important. Our public outreach, which is something that the Coastal Commission specifically wanted, will begin next summer. And then, of course, we would need time to wrap up the comments from public outreach, do reviews, and get it submitted. And so that would bring us to 2027. Meanwhile, we will continue all of our monitoring and reporting efforts. Next slide, please. So, on the right, you do see an outline for our CAPE, just to let you know that we have made substantial progress. This additional time will allow us to complete more analysis, including effects of Indianola, which is the overpass that Abby mentioned, along with 0M270, which is an interim sea level rise project that will take place and will go to construction before the CAPE projects are implemented. We also would like to continue our coordination with local governments and the technical advisory committee, as well as key landowners, and lastly, to fulfill our public engagement plan. Next slide, please. So the Cal Poly Humboldt Vulnerability Assessment is a huge part of our CAPE. We have very detailed methods that integrate information from coastal and hydraulic hazard analysis modeling, and this has been done on a sub-corridor scale, so we've divided the corridor into six segments. Next slide, please. As you can see here, each segment is represented in a different color. The reason it's not three segments and the north and southbound lanes are different colors is because they do exist at different elevations at the moment. So different treatments would be needed in the short term, or different vulnerabilities are expressed now. Next slide, please. So here again are those corridors I just talked about, and a handy little key at the bottom that lets you know the vulnerability. So red will tell you the number of days per year we expect to see more than 4 inches of water. This is somewhat of an arbitrary number, but it does represent something that you would see water hitting the bottom floorboards of low cars. So you can see we're still working on our northeastern corridor numbers, but you can see some areas of the corridor are as vulnerable as early as 2030, and some areas are vulnerable not until 2060. Next slide, please. Quickly, this is a northbound lane profile. Just wanted to show you the point I made earlier that the road is not at a single elevation, and it does change quite a bit. We've got low areas, and then of course we've got the higher peaks. Next slide, please. So I just want to introduce 0M270, which is an interim sea level rise project. So I'll start by saying the CAPE is a significant planning level document that will result in exactly that, a plan. We then need to find money to program these projects and get them built. This will take time. 0M270 was identified because we do have those low-lying areas of the corridor that you just saw, and we need to do something now. We do have available climate funds, so this project will be programmed in July, and then we'll go to construction in early 2030. Next slide, please. 0M270, what you can see on the right, I know it's a little small, but I just want to let you know everything that we are proposing in this project, we have worked closely with our local Coastal Commission staff to ensure that it is compatible with all future CAPE suggested projects. So this is not a massive overbuild. It's really just what we need to do now to buy us some time until 2050 to ensure our highway stays open. This project will include steps to enhance hydraulic connectivity, to improve the tidal prism, and then also some upsizing of culverts and upgrading of tide gates. Next slide, please. So just summary, I know you've heard it quite a few times now, but because we've made substantial progress on the CAPE and we really want to get this document right, we want to have that public outreach and continue our partnership with Cal Poly Humboldt. We need a little more time to do that in-depth analysis, and thus we are asking for 2 additional years. Next slide, please. I'm available for questions, and if after the meeting any commissioners want additional information, I'm also around. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, any members of the public who wish to speak?
None.
Okay. Thank you. I will close the public hearing and ask if staff has any further input. None?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. I'll bring it back to the commission. Comments, questions? Commissioner Wilson?
Yeah, I just want to give my support for this extension. The meeting where we impose these conditions on Caltrans was my first meeting at the commission, and I think there are the commission put a lot of conditions on Caltrans at that time, one of which was to be actively promoting and building the trail between Arcata and Eureka as part in the corridor, which is finished now, so hooray for that, as well as some removal of some billboards along the bay, and there's other things too. And I will say that as an adjacent agency in this process, I witnessed it's been difficult to get everybody on board, and I will say Lorna has been doing a really good job of doggedly trying to pull this together, and you know, even our agency has had a bit of challenges around our airport situation, and if anyone doesn't know this, we've had a few airport directors since then, so there's been a lot going on, and so I just want to say that I think they're hard charging as best they can. I think the 2-year extension is completely reasonable, so, and I'll make a motion to that point, I suppose, as soon as I bring it up here on the screen. The number again.
8A.
This is item 8A.
8A. Okay. Sorry about that.
And maybe while you're doing that through the chair, okay. If I could just provide a quick comment. Just wanted to appreciate the partnership that we have had with Caltrans on this and other projects. This is an example of where through that partnership, our staff have been working really close together and to kind of move these things forward as best we can. And so we feel really confident in recommending a 2-year extension because we have seen and have been working with them all along and see the progress. These things do take time. And so we think that's totally reasonable to your point, Commissioner Wilson. So just again, wanted to appreciate Lorna and all the staff that we're working with on this and again, appreciate the partnership in general.
Yep. Okay. I move the commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit number 1078, pursuant to the staff recommendation. I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Kelly. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Okay, now we will move on to item 9, the Deputy Director's Report for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency.
Thank you. As you said, this is item 9, the Deputy Director Report for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency. We're reporting 5 negative determinations this month, but don't have any items that require commission action. I also don't believe that we have any speakers signed up, so this is a very short and sweet Deputy Director's Report.
Wow, indeed. Okay. Now we'll move on to item 11. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Item 11 is the North Central Coast Deputy Director's Report. And in the report this month, we are reporting 1 waiver for a small coffee shop expansion in Pacifica. We are not aware of any objections or controversy regarding this matter, and so the question is whether 4 or more commissioners object, and if not, then the commission will concur.
Thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments? Okay.
None.
Thank you. Do 4 or more commissioners object? Seeing no objection, the commission concurs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That brings us to item 12, the Central Coast Deputy Director's Report. And in that report this month, we are reporting 1 waiver, 3 coastal permit amendments, and 1 LCP certification review. On the latter, I would note that we received an objection, which is in the correspondence package for this item, and I would further note that we distributed an addendum in response. I won't go into significant detail on the points raised, past saying the objections suggest that Santa Cruz County did not properly adopt the commission's suggested modifications and takes issue with the mods themselves. As further explained in the addendum, we believe that the county's action to accept the changes directed by the commission was legally adequate, which is the standard that applies here, and the objection does not change the executive director's determination in this regard. Further, as noted in the addendum as well, the objector's opposition to the commission's action is immaterial at this point. Namely, at this juncture, the commission has already deliberated and taken a final action on the amendment, and any sort of re-review or re-litigation of the issues associated with that action is not possible. Thus, the executive director continues to report the county appropriately accepted the mods as directed by the commission, and the objection does not change the executive director's determination in any case. Also, and to be clear, LCP certification review does not require any type of commission concurrence. Rather, the regs simply require that the executive director report that the county has made the changes required by the commission in its conditional certification in a legally adequate manner. Once that is done, as it is being done today, then the amended LCP is certified in that form. I note that to help make clear that this is not a time to revisit any substantive issues associated with the commission's conditional certification. Rather, the sole question is whether the county appropriately adopted the suggested modifications identified by the commission. And in this case, it is the executive director's determination that they did. For the items that do require concurrence, we are not aware of any objections or controversy regarding these matters. And so the question is whether 3 or more commissioners object. And if not, then the commission will concur.
Great, thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
Yes, David Miller.
Thank you.
David Miller, if you can unmute yourself. There you go.
Sorry, I had a secondary mute on. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. David Miller on behalf of William and Susan Porter. I don't have a lot to add. We submitted our comment letter last Friday. I hope you all have had a chance to review it. I would just like to reiterate that the process around the adoption or the second reading of the ordinance was confusing. A lot of interested parties that were concerned about their development rights for their properties that are affected by this ordinance were caught kind of unaware of the correct date of the hearing and were not informed that they had received a response from HCD and therefore did not know that this item was passed quickly on the consent calendar shortly after it was continued. So like I said, the process was confusing and we're simply asking for remand to allow the county to provide these individuals an opportunity to address the issues. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it. No more speakers.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will bring it back to the commission and ask whether three or more commissioners object to any item in the report. Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. And now we'll move on to item 13B, please.
Thank you. And I believe we have a presentation. Okay. Item 13B is a proposed Monterey County LCP amendment to update ADU regulations in the unincorporated county coastal zone. Slide one here includes an image of the iconic Big Sur coast, which comprises a large portion of Monterey County's coastal zone. Next slide, please. Monterey County, outlined here in red, is located to the south of the San Francisco Bay Area between Santa Cruz and San Luis Obispo counties at approximately the midpoint of California's coastline. Next slide, please. The county's coastal zone encompasses a wide range of areas from the rural agricultural North County to the resort-focused and single-family residential-built environments within the Del Monte Forest and Carmel areas to the largely undeveloped and mountainous Big Sur Coast. Given this vast geography with distinct characteristics and development patterns, the Monterey County LCP is broken out into four separate area plans, one each for North County, Del Monte Forest, Carmel, and the Big Sur Coast, each outlined here in different colors, north to south. This amendment would constitute the county's first ADU regulations update in a decade and is, in part, intended to reflect the many changes to state ADU law that have occurred since 2015. The proposed amendment would make a series of area-specific and overarching changes to ADU and JADU permitting and permissibility, the net effect of which would be to allow ADUs in more places, introduce JADUs as an allowable form of housing, and to streamline ADU and JADU approval, all while still ensuring ADUs and JADUs are appropriately sited and designed to protect coastal resources. Next slide, please. Perhaps the most significant area-specific change proposed in the amendment is lifting the current ban on ADUs in the heavily agricultural North County area. This ban is currently in place due to water supply limitations. The region's entire water supply is sourced from groundwater within overdrafted aquifers experiencing saltwater intrusion. The Coastal Act and the LCP require the protection of agriculture as a coastal priority use, including the prioritization of scarce water for agricultural use. As such, additional non-coastal priority water-using development, such as ADUs and JADUs, presents a challenge. To help offset the potential increase in water use caused by new units, the county's proposal includes a suite of water conservation requirements for properties in North County when such units are constructed. These measures include water efficiency standards for water-using fixtures on all structures on the property, and replacement of irrigated ornamental landscaping with drought-tolerant landscaping. Furthermore, many areas of North County are environmental justice communities with a critical lack of housing, and the region's agricultural economy is dependent on workers who are part of these communities. Housing, particularly the smaller scale housing provided by ADUs and JADUs that is more likely to be more affordable, is both an environmental justice issue and critically important to the region's agricultural economy. As such, Commission staff believe the proposed changes strike an appropriate balance and adequately protect coastal resources, including agriculture, in the region. Next slide, please. Another significant area-specific change is the removal of the 40-acre minimum parcel size for ADUs in the unincorporated Carmel area. This area has long had water and wastewater issues, including septic contamination into wells and coastal waters. The 40-acre minimum parcel size was intended to address these constraints by significantly limiting the number of ADUs in the Carmel area. Where properties are served by public water and sewer services, ADUs should not pose a significant issue in that respect. However, significant issues remain for neighborhoods relying on private wells and septic systems, such as the Carmel Highlands area. To address private well and septic issues in these areas and throughout the county, the proposed amendment requires review and approval from the County Department of Health for proposed ADUs and JADUs. This requirement will allow ADUs to be constructed where they can be safely accommodated and will prevent their construction where they're inappropriate. Next slide, please. This approach, where ADUs are generally allowed subject to coastal resource protection requirements, can be understood as the overall ethos of the proposed amendment. The current LCP includes various general and area-specific lot size requirements. It does not allow ADUs in some residential zoning districts. It caps ADUs in Big Sur at 50 total, and it prohibits ADUs in Monterey Cypress Habitat. The proposed amendment lifts all of these blanket restrictions and instead relies on new and existing coastal resource protection policies to ensure ADUs and JADUs do not have adverse coastal resource impacts. Next slide, please. Finally, with respect to permitting, the proposed amendment would streamline permitting review for better consistency with state ADU law and would exempt some ADUs and JADUs directly attached to single-family homes from CDP requirements. These exemptions would be limited to those allowable under the Commission's regulations. For instance, attached ADUs could not be exempt if they would impact ESHA or wetlands, if they were located within 50 feet of a coastal bluff, or if a past CDP required future changes at the site to have a coastal development permit. Next slide, please. Staff believes that the proposed LCP amendment would appropriately expand housing opportunities in the Monterey County Coastal Zone while protecting coastal resources. Staff has worked with county staff over several years on this amendment and appreciates the county's collaboration. Staff recommends that the Commission approve the amendment as submitted, and the motion to do so is found on page 4 of the staff report. This concludes staff's presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll ask for ex partes on this matter. Okay. Seeing none, we will open the public hearing. Chris, are there representatives from local government wish to speak? Okay, get started.
Yes, we have 2 in person. Oh, they're online now. Sanchez, Edgar, we're moving them over right now to
great
panels.
Thank you.
And Sarah, you should be able to unmute yourselves, Edgar and Sarah.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I have just a brief update. So good morning, commissioners. My name is Edgar Sanchez, and I'm an assistant planner with the Monterey County Housing and Community Development Department. And I'm here to express the county's strong support for the commission staff recommendation to approve the county's local coastal program amendment for accessory dwelling units. This amendment is a critical step that can help address the severe housing shortage throughout the Monterey County's coastal communities. ADUs have the potential to create new housing opportunities without requiring large-scale subdivision, high-density housing, or major new infrastructure, which is especially important for environmentally sensitive habitats in the coastal zones. For years, the county's LCP has included restrictions for ADUs, such as the large minimum lot size requirements, the numeric caps, and even prohibitions in some areas like North County. So Monterey County has been working for more than a decade to modernize the coastal ADU regulations. These updates to the coastal ADU regulations started in 2011 when the Board of Supervisors adopted an LCP amendment to that replaced references to caretaker units with accessory dwelling units in our coastal zoning ordinance. In 2015, following these changes to state housing law, the county further amended the ADU policies and established updated development standards. And in 2020, in response to new legislation, once again, the county began updating these regulations, which leads us to today's update. The update before you today will remove those outdated regulations and aligns the coastal regulations with the state ADU law, all while maintaining LCP's strong resource protection framework. Overall, I think the amendment modernizes the LCP to allow ADUs throughout all areas where single-family homes are allowed and supports the county's housing goals and furthers the Coastal Act's objectives of providing housing opportunities while safeguarding sensitive coastal resources. We appreciate the Coastal Commission staff's collaborative work over the past several years and to help shape the program. So Thank you, and we urge the approval of the amendment as submitted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we'll go to the public. Oh, does Sarah need to speak as well, Sarah Weichel?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate. Thank you so much. Thank you, commissioners. My name is Sarah Weichel. I'm a principal planner with our advanced planning team. I also wanted to note that we have our chief of planning here, Melanie Baretti, and we're happy to answer any questions. As Edgar noted, we strongly support the Coastal Commission to approve the LCP amendment as submitted. There's been a lot of really good collaborative work on the county side and with the Coastal Commission, so I just wanted to extend our sincere appreciation to the collaborative nature of getting this before you today. So again, we're happy to answer any questions you may have, and again, encourage the approval of the amendment as submitted. Thank you.
Perfect. So we have about 8 speakers via Zoom, but only showing 4 so far, so we're going to go with Miroslava Magalin, followed by Pat Kronlund and Martha Chavaria and Brianna Chavaria. That's who we see so far. Christina McGinnis, Jessica Ayala, and Lucas Handy, and Adi Rangel. If you guys can use the raise hand function, and we'll start off with Miroslava Magalin. Okay, you can go ahead and start talking, Miroslava. You're unmuted. Okay, maybe you're having some technical difficulties. Let's go. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead and speak.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, and as far as the ADU unit for the North Maury County Coastal Zone is a meaningful and necessary step toward the need to help our children to live in this area and help our parents to be able to have care by us. It will benefit the many families in our area that are struggling with the high costs that we have in Maury County. Permitting ADUs is a practical and much needed in our area, and I would urge you to please help our residents to adopt this policy that allow for the development of the ADU units in our area. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Patty Cronlow.
Yes, good morning. Dear Chair Harmon and commissioners, my name is Patty Cronlund. I am the executive director of the Community Association of Big Sur, also known as CABS. CAB submitted a public comment letter on October 3rd in support of the Monterey County's LCP ADU amendment and in support of the Coastal Commission staff's report. CAB strongly supports the following Big Sur specific areas of the amendment: removing the existing 50-unit ADU cap, removing the current 2-acre minimum parcel size limit for ADUs and JADUs, allowance for ADUs and JADUs on land with watershed and scenic conservation and rural residential land use designations, requiring a 90-day minimum rental to prevent short-term rentals, ADUs continued requirement to meet the land use plan's critical view shed requirements, which prohibits new development within view of Highway 1 and other public areas, streamlining the permitting process for ADUs and JADUs, adding that CABS believes that ADUs must still align with the land use plan, avoid sensitive areas, and follow slope and zoning requirements. CABS respects and understands community concerns and that these changes do not mean unchecked development or disregard for planning framework in place or the Big Sur land use plan. There is an important element that CABS would like to suggest and be considered by Monterey County staff and the California Coastal Commission. These are yurts, modular homes, and tiny homes on wheels as an ADU option. They are more affordable and quicker long-term housing in place. Thank you. We support the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Martha Chavaria, followed by Brianna Chavaria. Martha, if you can unmute yourself.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. My name is Martha Chavarria. I'm a resident here at North Monterey County, and I'm also president of North County LULAC, and I'm also board trustee of North Monterey County Unified School District for the last 12 years. I cannot tell you how excited I am about this finally coming on the Coastal Commission agenda, because we've been advocating for this for exactly 2 years ago in October 2024. When we addressed this concern with Supervisor Church, and then we started collaborating with Craig Spencer and Edgar Sanchez and what we can do to make this amendment and this proposal. So I am so excited to be here today, and I strongly advocate for this, and I have a statement that I'd like to read. And this is the statement that I'm really happy that right now we're addressing this issue, because the current housing crisis is not an abstract issue. It directly affects the stability, health, and educational success of our community. In our local school districts, over 80% of the students are classified as socioeconomically disadvantaged, and 30% are experiencing homelessness. These numbers are not just statistics. They represent families struggling to survive in regions where housing has become increasingly inaccessible. So permitting ADUs is a practical, community-based solution that can provide much-needed, affordable, and flexible housing options without altering the character of our neighborhoods. ADUs are the support of multi-generational living, enable aging in place, and offer rental opportunities for local workers and families who otherwise cannot afford to live near their jobs or schools. So expanding access to ADUs in the Coastal Zone is making history, and I really look forward to, and I urge you to prioritize the needs of our most vulnerable residents, especially our children, and adopt these policies that allow for the development of additional dwelling units in the North Monterey County Coastal Zone. So thank you for your leadership and commitment to move to a more inclusive and resilient community. And I really, again, want to thank the collaboration with Edgar and Sarah and all the alignment and all the work that you guys did to make this happen. And we're actually here today to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Brianna Chavarria. And the other four that we weren't seeing available, if you guys can raise your hand function, that'd be great on Zoom. If not, then this will be the last person.
Hi, good morning, commissioners. My name is Brianna Chavarria, and I'm a longtime community member of North Monterey County. I've been patiently and eagerly waiting for this meeting, hopeful that we can finally move forward with allowing ADUs in the North County Coastal Commission. It's been confusing to see surrounding areas permitted to build ADUs while we continue to face restrictions, especially when many of our properties have more than enough space to responsibly accommodate an additional unit. There are students that are experiencing homelessness, and these families really do need safe, stable, and local housing, which I believe ADUs would be the answer for that. And they are a smart, low-impact solution, so please help us bring equity and opportunity to our community to allow ADUs in the North County Coastal Zone. Thank you.
Thank you. So we see two hands up in Zoom. We're going to allow Adalia to unmute and speak. Hopefully she's one of the speakers.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you say your name so we know if you're on the list?
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know why it says Adalia, but it's A.D. Rangel.
Oh, yes, we see you on there. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to speak on the importance of allowing ADUs in North Monterey County. Right now, our area faces a serious shortage of affordable and flexible housing. Families are being priced out. Seniors can't afford to age in place. And workers who support our local economy often have to commute long distances just to find a home. ADUs are a simple, community-based solution. They allow homeowners to create small, safe housing on existing properties without changing the rural character of our neighborhoods. Reminder that some of these homes are properties are 2.5 acres, so they have the space. They can provide housing for aging parents, adult children, or essential workers who keep our country running. North Monterey County deserves the same opportunity that other parts of California already have to build responsibly, to house our families, and to strengthen our communities. It's time to make these ADUs an option here in North Monterey County. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more person. It's saying Zoom user. We're going to allow you to speak. Can you state your name to see if your name is on the speaker list?
Hello, my name is Jessica Yala.
I'm at 325 Mayher Road in Royal Oaks. And I want to thank everybody for all the good work that they've put into this. And the community is very excited. I came across a couple individuals in the last couple weeks that have been talking about this. And they are very, very excited and very grateful and are looking forward to have ADUs on their property. And I'd like to read something to you, and please keep this in mind, that a family of four making $115,000 is considered low income in Monterey County in 2025, according to the calculations of the California of Housing and Community Development. An individual making $80,000 a year is now considered low income. It is very expensive to live in this area, and this will only bring stability to our community, our family members, and friends. This is a win for everybody, and I encourage you to pass this. We are in support of this. We are in great need of housing with this moratorium being in place for 30 years. I think it is time that this coastal zone approve the amendment for additional housing and definitely bring the community together, because there's a lot of families that are being separated because of the cost of living and having to move out, that there's not an alternative at the moment. And this will provide that that avenue to keep families together and also provide rental homes for single families. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes all of our speakers.
Great. Thank you very much. So I will bring it back to the commission and turn it over to Commissioner Lopez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the appropriate time, I'd appreciate the opportunity to make the motions after we've heard from my fellow commissioners. But I just wanted to share that this issue is one that's personal and important to me. In Monterey County, we have been extremely active in modernizing our ADU allowances and ordinances to follow the state guidelines and requirements. I live it personally. I built an ADU on my property, and my in-laws moved in, retiring from Napa, where they were. It gave them the opportunity to retire, to be frank. One was a child care worker, my mother-in-law, and my father-in-law was a handyman for many years. But owning their home, they were still trapped and having to keep it up. By building the ADU on our property, the leveraging of multiple generations on one piece of land gave us every opportunity we dreamed about. I get to continue to serve on a ton of boards to the point that it gets uncomfortable, and my wife gets to keep doing what she loves, which is working every day in the wine industry that we are blessed with in California. And it's because on site, I have childcare. On site, I have somebody who's constantly vigilant and taking care of this place that we love so much, and the people that we've created together, our beautiful children. And I know for so long, these families, specifically in North County, have been calling out for the same opportunity given the land that they are on, and seeing really very low barriers to their entry into this opportunity. And so the ordinance that's before you has taken a lot of crafting, and seeing Patty up on the screen talking about the positions of support from Big Sur, and knowing Butch, her husband, who recently passed but was really a stalwart of that community, it brought back to me a quote that I read when he passed that I just want to read, which is, you know, he was talking specifically about the balance between the desire to use the land for tourism and the desire to continue to preserve it. And he talked about the fact that there's extremes on both sides, but we're trying to hold the space in the middle that will get us to the point where we can actually do something, because not doing something is not an option. And I think that's the spirit of this particular set of ordinances around ADUs in Monterey County. It was about doing something to allow for our community to move forward. There's progress built into this, and that's the reason that I'm supporting it today and look forward to seeing this move today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That was beautifully said. Thank you. Any other comments? Commissioner Wilson.
Yeah, I wholly support this this amendment, I guess, this ADU process. And I want to have a couple questions that are just clarifying for staff. And they're just about the ag land section. There's not really timberlands, is there, in this? Yeah. Okay. So for us, we have when we talk about resource lands and the protection of resource lands. And there's language in here about the inability to use ADUs to do subdivisions. And again, this is protection of lands where farming and agricultural activities, sometimes there's a lot of threats to that through subdivision, and then sometimes de facto subdivision, which means, which was a concern of ours in our rural area around ADUs. And so there's a lot of good language in here that says that there won't be subdivision. But I was kind of wondering from the physical parameters, and I'll just give an example. In our ADU ordinance, we limited the ADU to a 2-acre curtilage, which is around the main house, so that there wouldn't be a de facto subdivision or fragmentation. And I'm just kind of wondering, there are some policies in here about, you know, not allowing for the conversion of ag soils and other protections. The other part we also had was one driveway, so that the ADU was really part of the main agricultural living space. And I'm just kind of wondering, do those protections exist in here? I mean, I read through it, they seem indirect, and they almost seem like process-like as opposed to being very explicit. And so can you speak to that?
Yeah, certainly. So you're correct. There aren't explicit requirements for a shared driveway or kind of co-location within a certain area. There is kind of an incentive structure inherent to the amendment, where certain ADUs can be exempt if they're directly attached to the main residence. And I think we think that will incentivize more attached ADUs. There are also, you know, ADUs that are not attached are going to need to comply with LCP requirements. So to the extent that they would impact coastal resources by kind of dispersing development into inappropriate locations, whether that would be impacts to ESHA or, you know, agricultural lands, you know, that would not be allowed, and those policies would direct ADUs to appropriate locations on the property, which would most likely be, you know, adjacent to existing residences.
And I would assume it's like a lot of ADU ordinances, and maybe I'm wrong, where you can build the new structure but convert the old structure into the ADU, the existing structure. Does it have that sort of swap ability in this ordinance?
I'm not entirely sure if it has that explicit language saying that you can do that. I don't think that there's any language saying that you cannot do that. It might be worth asking the county if you're interested in that specific policy language.
Yeah, because again, this is really specific to large lots and large agricultural lots, and sort of the concern about how these things can be, again, fragmented. And so even 1,200 square feet may not sound like a lot to a lot of people, but for those of us who raise kids in 900 square feet, it sounds like a lot. So I'm just kind of wondering if the county could address that question. Thanks.
It's probably appropriate for Melanie, if Melanie's available.
Can we please bring the county in?
Yes. Let's bring Edgar. If you can unmute, and Sarah Weichel.
Is Melanie available?
Melanie, no.
She might be in the attendees list if she hasn't been promoted to a panelist.
We're moving her over right now. Yes, we're moving her over right now.
We'll just wait 1 second. She'll try. Thank you very much.
Melanie, if you can unmute. She's moving over, but she's still muted. Okay.
Great. Good morning. Yeah, really briefly on that topic. With our regulations, there's nothing explicit in our ADU regulations that prohibit if you have an existing single family dwelling that meets the criteria and standards for an ADU per these regulations, and you wish to build a second single-family dwelling, there's nothing that would disallow converting an existing single-family to be the accessory dwelling unit and constructing a new single-family dwelling on a parcel, as it would be allowed. Again, I think as coastal staff indicated, there's a fair number of protections in our LCP and policies that help to encourage clustering, help to try to really minimize physical footprint of any new construction that would happen.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I support this. I just, it would be great if regionally our staffs, I know they do, but occasionally we could talk about these sort of land use protections sort of more explicitly and have more direct protections. I understand that, I guess for me, it's just harder for staff sometimes at the local level to be discretionary under these situations and have to make those determinations when we could be more, a little bit more prescriptive in getting it, those in, and so that the process can actually be faster to get these things done. But with that, I support the motion when it comes, and I thank you for the conversation.
Thank you. Commissioner Kelly.
I just want to align myself with the comments of my colleagues, Commissioner Lopez and Commissioner Wilson, and say that, you know, as we're looking at these policies, I just want to highlight, you know, the diverse nature of the land uses within the state, especially in regions where we continue to try to promote resource preservation and agricultural lands. And so the nuanced approach to this issue, and especially here, you know, on this particular topic, when we're dealing with counties who have, you know, a multitude of land uses in different parts of the county, it makes sense to have a site-specific approach and really to look more deeply and not just have kind of widespread bans or looking at how these ADUs can support the existing coastal resource policies, whether it's for public access, visitor-supporting uses, ADUs for our workforce to live in so that they can support visitor-supporting uses, as well as agricultural preservation. So just wanted to echo those comments and support the effort here. Thank you.
Thank you. And I fully align myself with the comments of my colleagues. Very insightful. And really appreciate the conversation. Commissioner Lopez, to you.
So I understand at this time we need two motions. So first, I would move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment LCP 3 MCO 25-0034-1, Part A, as submitted by Monterey County. I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's a motion by Commissioner Lopez, a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing no objections, we'll move to the second item, please.
So Part B, I believe, is that I will move that the Commission reject Implementation Plan Amendment LCP MCO 25-0034-1 Part A as submitted by Monterey County, and I recommend a no vote.
Second.
That's a motion by Commissioner Lopez, a second by Commissioner Kelly. Any objections to a unanimous no vote? Seeing no objections, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Is rejected. Okay, congratulations. And with that, we will move to the legislative report that was trailed from Wednesday. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Drake.
Just give us one sec.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners. This is the legislative report for October. Last month, staff covered several pieces of priority legislation that had already been signed by the governor at that time. Over the past few weeks, the governor has either signed or vetoed most of the rest of the commission's other priority bills that made it to his desk. And I'll just briefly walk through some of those results today. First is AB 149 by the Assembly Budget Committee, which was signed in mid-September. This is a budget trailer bill staff mentioned last month that adds language to the Coastal Act, clarifying that all temporary developments undertaken in the coastal zone as a part of the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games will be considered temporary events that are exempt from the coastal development permit process. The bill also requires the LA 28 committee and the commission to coordinate to ensure that these temporary developments avoid significant impacts to coastal resources. Since this is a budget bill, its provisions took effect immediately upon being signed. Another recently signed priority bill is AB 357 by Assemblymember Alvarez. In its final form, this bill amends the Coastal Act to facilitate the development of university housing in the coastal zone by creating an expedited process for the Commission to quickly approve amendments to university long-range development plans and to public works plans that present no resource impacts. The bill also provides policy direction to the Commission regarding the provision of residential parking on university campuses. About an hour ago now, the governor signed AB 462 by Assemblymember Lowenthal. In its final form, the bill shortens the amount of time that the Commission and local governments have to process coastal development permits for ADUs. The new permitting deadline is 60 days after the agency receives a complete CDP application. The bill would also eliminate appeals of local ADU CDPs. This bill contains an urgency clause, meaning that it took effect immediately when it was signed. Staff will be working internally and with local governments to make the necessary procedural changes to implement the provisions of this legislation. Shifting over to Senate bills, another bill signed by the governor just this morning is SB 79 by Senator Wiener. This is the bill that was discussed by the Commission on Wednesday regarding development of housing in the vicinity of transit stations. The measure will take effect on January 1st. In anticipation of that, staff will continue to evaluate the role of the Commission and local governments in helping to implement this legislation in alignment with the Coastal Act. One bill that is technically a new addition to staff's written report this month, but which will sound familiar, is SB 237 by Senator Grayson. This bill ended up being the vehicle in which the legislature passed the governor's suite of proposals aimed at stabilizing state oil and gas markets. Among the enacted proposals is language that was previously in another bill staff has been reporting on this session, AB 1448 by Assemblymember Greg Hart. That language, which was amended into SB 237 last month, amends the Coastal Act to clarify the legal pathway by which development that's associated with inactive oil and gas pipelines would obtain a coastal development permit. That bill was signed into law in mid-September. SB 254 by Senator Becker was also signed. That's the Senate omnibus bill that makes numerous statutory changes related to energy. Staff has been tracking the bill because it originally contained a provision that would have created a more formalized process for the Commission and the Energy Commission to coordinate on the permitting of certain renewable energy projects in the coastal zone, which staff had no concerns with. However, in the final days of session, the bill was substantially amended to remove a number of provisions and add in a handful of other provisions related to other energy topics. In the course of this reshuffling, the piece related to the Commission was removed from the bill before it went to the governor's desk. And so, in its final signed form, this bill no longer affects the Commission. In a bit of happy news, I'm pleased to say that on Monday, the governor signed SB 484, which the Commission supported. That bill adds language to the Coastal Act directing the Commission to establish categorical exclusions for 100% affordable housing projects in the infill areas of three or more uncertified local jurisdictions. The bill garnered support from both environmental and housing organizations. It'll take effect January 1st, and then the Commission will have until July 2027 to establish the three initial CADEXs. The governor did veto several bills listed in the legislative report. The one I'll mention is AB 399 by Assemblymember Borner, which would have explicitly authorized the Commission to require applicants for projects that would impact coastal wetland or tidal habitat to contribute to blue carbon demonstration projects as their project mitigation. For many of the vetoed bills this year, including this one, the governor's veto message expressed fiscal concerns with the proposed legislation given the current budget deficit. A link to the governor's veto message can be found in staff's written report. Looking ahead, the last day for the governor to sign or veto bills is this Sunday. The legislature is then currently scheduled to remain in recess until Monday, January 5th, at which point the 2026 legislative session will begin. Early next year, staff will return to you with the annual new laws memo, which will summarize the signed bills from this session that either amended the Coastal Act or impact the Commission in some way, as well as any actions the Commission will take to implement that legislation. And with that, Chair Harmon, that concludes the legislative report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Drake. Are there any public comments on the legislative report?
There are none.
Great. And I thank you. I will return to the Commission. Any questions? Commissioner Wilson.
Well, thank you for that great report, and I'm so happy about Senator Laird's bill getting through, and I think it's a great example of activists, housing activists and environmentalists getting together to really do something positive and move in the right direction. I just want to reiterate my concern with 462. I know there are the intention of this is to streamline housing and specifically ADUs in the coastal zone and elsewhere. I am hoping that there's not the unintended consequences from this, in that this is just not having reviews come to us or appeals come to us, because most of the time these appeals are neighbor on neighbor, and many times these appeals are neighbor on neighbor in well-resourced neighborhoods. And so what I fear is that then the local jurisdiction, many of whom are pretty well trained on Coastal Act processes, but some may not be as well versed, and they still have to adapt to the Coastal Act and interpret that through their own thing. But the thing about the appeal process is it's usually done within 60 days. It's free. It's then a review done by state attorneys, essentially, with the backing of that state review, and then when that gets adjudicated through this body, which almost all the time is rejected, the appeal is rejected, or no substantial issue is found, is what I mean to say, is that then really actually gives the homeowner so much more legal backing and just the fortitude, I guess you'd say, the legal fortitude to move forward with their project. So I'm just saying, from my perspective, that appeal process, which actually was a free service provided by the Coastal Commission and this agency. So what I'm hoping not to see is that neighbor on neighbor review doesn't go forward, but then it results in lawsuits at the local level. And so, because maybe there might be holes that property owner wasn't availed of that extra review, legal review by our eminently proficient and qualified team. So that's just my concern. I hope we'll be able to address that later in some other legislation if some problems arise. I want more ADUs in the coastal zone. I want more housing in the coastal zone. And I want to make sure that we're an agency that provides that service as best we can. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Jackson.
One of those things, I wasn't going to say anything, but now, of course, I will. Just Commissioner Wilson just prompted, you know, we were talking about housing in the coastal zone and the importance of that. And short-term rentals, as we know, has an impact on that. So I was just wondering if you're any reading of the tea leaves on SB 346, I believe it is, short-term rental oversight provision. I'm assuming that is, we have no word on that, or any reading on the tea leaves of which way that might go.
Unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball on that one, but as an upside, we'll find out within 48 hours.
True that, as they say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our meeting. I want to thank staff for their amazing work, as always. AGP, thank you all for keeping us on target. And thank you to Redondo Beach for hosting us. It was a great couple days. To my fellow commissioners and the public, thank you for your work, and excited to see you all in Sacramento next month. We're adjourned.